The Riff. The hipster's life is strongly influenced by jazz music. Much, if not most, of the hip vocabulary originated with jazz musicians. Isn't that right, Mr. Romo?
Yes, that's right. It's true.
Now take, for example, the riff, the conversational riff, which is a spoken counterpart of the jazz riff, which is an instrumental solo improvised around a set of chords or upon a given theme.
Oh, my.
Mr. Romo, I wonder if here in the studio you couldn't give us an example of a riff.
Well, I think I could do better than give you an example, which would be me saying, this is what I heard, at a very great expense to myself from an aspect of my cool, because everyone has a limited supply of cool, and it's very easy to blow it. And I have done something which could have blown all my cool. I have taken that little microcorder thing you gave me, that tiny little machine, and I have bring you in-person riffs, people from various parties, things with scenes were going on. Like last week at the feast of the Saturday night delightful pudding, which we call it. Like, you have to call something more than what it is in order to make it more appealing, because you say...
Fine, Mr. Romo.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I thought you'd take it.
In the control booth there, would you run the tape?
Yeah. There was this cat, man, a very far-out cat. Like, he had weird ideas. Couldn't stop his head, you know? He was hip, he was in some kind of genius, but dig. Like, this cat was such an out genius that the thing he was a genius at hadn't been invented yet. So what does he do? He decides he's going to be the world's most esoteric concert promoter, you think? He gets these enormous posters printed up, and he puts them all over town, and they say, he is coming. And people look at the posters, and they say, oh, that, wow. Well, like, it's difficult to arouse anybody's interest in it. Then about a week and a half later, new posters go up. Big ones, brighter ones. They shine at night and says, he is coming to Carnegie Hall. And then a little later, he is coming to Carnegie Hall on October 23rd. And now people are hung up. They're beginning to get fascinated. Tickets are selling. Then there's a gigantic full-page ad in the New York Times. He is coming tonight. Crowds now, they've begun to mill out in front. And there are these posters 20 feet high that say, in old English script, he is here. Now, people are jammed. It's standing room only, 8:45. There's this hush of expectancy. The house lights dim. They take too long to dim. Little hanger. Then the curtain rises. In the middle of the stage is this gigantic sign. Man, he has gone.
I live in a violin. It's very comfortable in a violin. I keep it tidy. When the cigarette ashes have a tendency to fall in it, you know, I sweep them up and I throw them out. I don't believe that I interfere with the tone of the violin when it's in use. And when they're playing it, I pick a harmonic, resonant frequency and I hum. I like to think I add to the tone. I hear rumors that they're gonna tear it down and put up one of those electric 12-string steel guitars. What a drag. I understand that when they condemn a property, they have to move you to a dwelling of similar rent, condition, district. Like they couldn't put me in a trombone, you know. A cello, maybe, or a bass. Except that's kind of silly, you know, one guy living in the bass. Maybe I could live in one of those, what do you call those oriental things? Those triangular banjos. A balalaika. That'd be a groove. I could decorate it kind of Danish modern. If they do condemn the old fiddle here, I think I'll put in for a balalaika. Yeah.
Like, they're sending up a spaceship on a translunar orbit, you know?
And they send up this astronaut, man, and he's been hanging around Cape Canaveral a long time, and he gets his shot, you know, boom, he can go. And they also send up a laboratory animal along with him. to test the radiation and the Van Allen radiation belts and the cosmic rays and the genetic unpleasantness and that whole business. And so they decide to send along this frog, because they can cut him up afterwards, you know. And they're in orbit for 63 days, man. The man and the frog. And they come back and they land. Perfect landing, man. Beautiful in the Utah salt flats. Everything is happening marvelous. And the country goes wild. That pandemonium breaks loose. There's citations and congratulations from every country. And there's parades. There's a ticker tape parade up Fifth Avenue in New York. And everybody's flipping out, man. There's pictures of the cat and the frog. On the cover of Time and Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report and Life magazine, and to top it all off, they're booked on the Sullivan Show. So it's the night of the show. And Señor Wences does his bit, and he splits, and the spot comes on, and out comes the astronaut, and he's carrying this frog. And Sullivan becomes very effusive and congratulatory on the whole scene, and the medals, and the ribbons, and the ring-ding, and this heroic man, and this heroic frog, all alone in space for 63 days. I know the kids in the audience would dig to get a closer look at this little fella, and he reaches for the frog, man, and the astronaut flips. Get your hands off my frog.